Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the stolen ancestral territory of the Kwikwetlem, Usquam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
Listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree/CJSF radio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-CJSF. Welcome, everybody, to Slumber Party. We are here every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco.
And we just want to thank you for tuning into us today. We have a topic about Palestine and academic censorship that will be coming a bit later, and it does kind of diverge from that slightly throughout the course of the conversation, but we will see how it goes. The first song that we have coming up is by an Egyptian-Palestinian artist who expresses her contemporary Arabic identity through a variety of genres. She's very inspired by Little Sims. I really like this song. It's called Garage Al-Kahira by Maben and Karim Siri. So enjoy.
Enjoy.
حطوا القيمة على الورق عكاش الدنيا تسبن سبن يلا وين وين لحد ما تجن افتح شباكك والحق اخر حاجة ببلاش عيش ميت قبل ما تقوم طالع المعاش في البيت بيت بكرة تنزل عالدواش مش بنشوفك غير لما ندوس عالفلاش بشوفك قاعد بتجهز الصورة قصص الصورة سيك انك ماسك السطور رأيك عايم مية في النافورة يوم عشق ضلمة يوم سيد العشاء في النور عاش من شافك غير وانت عالشاشة يومي بالشخصية وش تحمل على فلاشة من مراية وانت بيض وبتتلاشة تصحى الصبح تلبس طقم نوفي المزغة الشاشة
تراك
Woman in Science, Technology, Engineering and Math. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting on your journey, the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology is here to support you every step of the way. From mentorship programs to networking and skill-building events, we've got the tools and resources you need to succeed and thrive in STEM. Visit squis.ca to learn more. That's SCWIST.ca. We can't wait to connect with you.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. You're tuning into Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I am DJ Star, and we are about to get into our discussion about Palestine and academic censorship. And as we know, the genocide in Palestine has been happening for over 2 years now. Since October 7th, 2023, and we haven't actually talked about it on this show yet, which is kind of crazy. It's been on my mind for a while, and I think everyone's mind collectively just in the world, like it's pretty hard to ignore. And I have been in this bubble of like pro-Palestinian people, and I just got kind of used to that idea and like thought that it was, yeah, like it's pretty common sense, you know, that it's an ethnic cleansing. And I've been getting like more involved on campus, and I also had a recent experience in one of my lectures actually with my professor bringing it up after there was like this in-class activity, and it's the what kind of thing where you like type in a little comment and then they show up on the screen, and somebody said something about like being targeted because they're Jewish and like because of what's happening in Palestine. So she kind of felt the need to address it, which makes total sense. But when she was talking about it, at least in this lecture setting, like she was really tiptoeing around, seemed like she actually did seem kind of scared, and like even like her voice was a little shaky and stuff when saying that it was a genocide and like calling it out for what it is. And that kind of made me think that there are, like, I know for sure in the US and in a lot of other countries that there are pretty obvious examples of academic censorship to do with pro-Palestinian discussions, but that moment kind of made me realize, like, okay, this seems to be a thing in Canada too, and it somehow is still a touchy subject even after all of the news reporting and journalism that's been going on in Palestine that pretty much shows that it is a genocide, and it's pretty hard to deny for me and for anyone who has most of the information. So, yeah.
I'd say I am coming from more of a neutral standpoint from previously, but now into, I don't want to say pro-Palestinian, but support for the Palestinian people.
What's the difference?
I don't want to say pro-Palestinian because I don't like the word pro for one country or another in a way, because both countries have humans at stake. I don't want to say like, oh, like I don't just want to support not the death, but just the life of one country. That's just kind of a more of a the ethicality of behind the word, or I want to say more about that, but no, that's not my point. But I'm coming more from not a really pro-Palestinian group of people or opinions. I haven't heard much of it other than hearing it from the news and not typically day-to-day in my classes. And my professors don't normally talk about it either, so I haven't really heard a more academic perspective, but I've heard it from and have been talking about it with my family, who are but both my mom and my dad are ex-journalists, and they've done a lot of research and reporting and producing material on politics and Middle Eastern conflict, etc. So I've had a lot of conversations with them before kind of making my not decision but doing a lot more research before sticking with something, especially as well that I don't use social media, and so I can't see a lot of things on social media either, so I'm a little bit isolated from more of the world affairs. But after this episode and preparing for this episode, I do feel that I can talk about it a bit more. And I do believe genocide is occurring in Palestine. And it actually, in my way of researching, I actually didn't think it was genocide at the beginning. I'm just going to be honest. Because of the way it was defined and the events in history. But maybe later on I can explain of how I came to this more newer conclusion, and could also explain why other people are not supporting Palestine, or look down on people who support and protest for Palestine and support more the Jewish people, especially with Canadians. But that will be a bit later. And this all kind of stemmed from the reason of why academic censorship is occurring, because, you know, that was our topic, and we hope to mostly pinpoint for that. But I fell into a rabbit hole of, is this genocide or not? Which maybe I'll touch on a bit later, but
yeah,
we'll see.
And I also just want to clarify that, like, for me, saying that I'm pro-Palestine does not mean I'm against Jewish people or, like, all Israeli people. It's more so, like, I'm against what the state of Israel and what the government of Israel is doing to Palestine. And that's what I mean when I say pro-Palestine. And it doesn't mean, you know, like, it's anti-Semitism, which I feel like is something that people get mixed up with or use as a way to, what's the word, like, repress any support or talking about being pro-Palestine. So, yeah. Moving on, just to, like, give a little bit of a background before we get into the academic censorship, is that, yeah, like, for me, I didn't, maybe, yeah, this is partially, I guess, being in this echo chamber, is like, I didn't realize it was still such a big debate of, like, whether or not it is a genocide. I was really confused when my professor was very gentle and careful about talking about it, because I was like, it's obvious, like, look at the statistics, look at the news, like, look at what's been happening. But yeah, I guess there are some statistics.
Yeah, there's one statistic from the Angus Reid Institution, where they conducted an online survey in early August 2025 of this year. And this took a sample of 1,522 Canadian adults. And it came out that 52% of them believe that genocide in Gaza is occurring as of August 2025, which is pretty shocking, which is split pretty much right across the line. Yeah. So, and it used to be 41% in February 2024. So there is a growing change to believe that it has hit a point of genocide, which now the United Nations has declared it genocide. That may also contribute.
Yeah, because, yeah, I just wanted to say that the UN Commission of Inquiry declared it was a genocide in 2025, which is fairly recent still, because, like, this has been going on for quite a while. And they say that it's the most extreme stage of a long-standing settler colonial process of erasure of native Palestinians. And yeah, we can get into the definition of what a genocide is now, or maybe a bit later. I'm not like, it might be useful to talk about it now.
Yeah,
actually,
so just before we get into the censorship and everything, we were having some questions about the definitions of, you know, like, what is genocide, and the fact that the definition is very strict for and not very fluid, since it was defined in the 1940s by the United Nations. And I think that does contribute to the reason why, Canadians especially are very divided on this idea of genocide in Palestine. And so the definition that is currently used worldwide is from the United Nations from 1948 Genocide Convention. And so it states that in the present convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group as such. One, killing members of the group. Two, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. Three, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or part. Four, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. And five, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And, you know, obviously Palestinians are dying, and there is harm being inflicted on the group. Hospitals are being bombed, and this does prevent births. And people are being shuffled around like herds to different places along the Gaza Strip. And this, under definition, it seems like it would. But the problem is that Israel is using the terminology that they are trying to exterminate the Hamas specifically, which is the Palestinian terrorist group, which they define as separately from the Palestinian people.
But also, just quickly to cut in about the fact that Hamas is a terrorist group, that isn't an internationally recognized label. Like, some countries do see it as a terrorist group and some others don't, because it is also Palestine's only form of government. And it says that it has, you know, a political and a military branch. And some people, you know, say that it overlaps and some don't. But it is pretty much Palestine's only way of having any kind of armed resistance against Israel. And also, the terms that Hamas is defined under to be a terrorist group is very, very similar to what Israel is actually doing to Palestine as well. So that gets to be pretty murky territory. So yeah, I just wanted to say that the word terrorist doesn't necessarily fit.
Yeah, I think if we look at a Canadian context, it may also lead into why there is censorship for Palestinian protests and support in Canada, because it is considered, Hamas is considered a terrorist organization just for Canada specifically, which is a currently listed entity for Government of Canada. But as DJ Star said, sorry, almost revealed your identity.
That's okay.
There are countries who don't designate it with that label. And so with these traditional definition, the problem is that genocide is particularly with this idea that it has to be an act committed to a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group. And the fact that Israel is saying that Hamas, and some countries are saying that Hamas is a terrorist organization, that it doesn't fall under this definition of genocide. And that's, I feel, a big issue with of this Canadian divide of opinion. And this can also go into, you know, some history as well. Like, people think, oh, genocide, the Holocaust, you know, like, Germans were obviously trying to exterminate, kill, mass murder, straight off the bat, just gas chamber these specific group of people. And same with, example, Cambodia in 1975, where Cambodians specifically, the ethnic group, was rounded up, taken to labor camps, and killed. But the problem with this more modern day Middle Eastern conflict is that with Israel saying that we are targeting the terrorist group, we're not trying to target the Palestinians. So technically, you know, anyone who's killed the Palestinians was not genocide because we're not intending to kill them, is what they're trying to say. And it is now, with further thorough research, is there is propaganda that they are putting out there to say they aren't killing Palestinian peoples. And I could get a lot more into that, but I don't want to go off into whole spew. So, Dita Star, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I think Israel is using Hamas as a scapegoat, I guess, to carry out a lot of these horrific things that they're doing. They're denying any aid to enter Palestine, and I don't understand how that's targeting Hamas, because that actually just affects all Palestinians who need food.
I did find that there is reports that they are sending aid, but it's definitely not enough. Like, for example, food. They are bringing some food. They're saying it, and that's how they're playing this good guy act of saying that they're bringing the food, but it still isn't just enough for the entire population they're moving.
Yeah, well, and most aid, I think, is not being let through, especially, like, when we see what happened with the flotillas. Like, they were just trying to bring aid and food to Palestine, and Israel, like, seized the boats. I think they kind of even, like, tortured Greta Thunberg. But that's beside the point. There's like shooting civilians who are even trying to access aid if it is getting through. It's like a systematic starvation of the whole population in Gaza. Mm-hmm. There's a whole list of reasons like that contribute to why it's a genocide. They say it's against Hamas, not the civilians. But there's a ton of child mortality. And I think UNICEF found 50,000 plus children have been killed or injured since October 2023.
I think the problem with that one, though, is that the thing with that it's killing more children is just because of the population structure of Gaza is very child dominant. That's just the way the population is structured. So I don't think they're intending to kill more children compared to any other war, but it's just the fact that they're just 47.3% of the population is under the age of 18, which they couldn't control for of who they kill, but that may be a factor into that.
But also, I've looked into what some of the officials are saying about Palestinian people, and the MP and deputy speaker of the Knesset, Nissan Vaturi, and the Knesset is basically a government organization that passes all laws, elects the president, prime minister, and supervises the work of the government. And this person said that every child born in Gaza is already a terrorist from the moment of his birth. And I've seen that same sentiment reflected in like multiple different government officials in the way that they see Palestinian children, which kind of justifies or like makes it right that they are being killed because they're like, oh, well, they're going to be a future terrorist. And perhaps it's like I don't want to say what their intention is because it is disproportionately more children, but it does seem based on this rhetoric that they're not necessarily trying to avoid that. And international humanitarian law, according to the Committee of the Red Cross, says that children affected by armed conflict are entitled to special respect and protection. So they're also violating that. Based on those pieces of information, I think it is still valid to bring up the fact about how many children have been killed and just the complete disregard for their lives as well.
Yeah, there is the idea. There is the fact that Israel has crossed the line with proportionality. Proportionality. Which they're killing a lot more people of what's needed in war at a humanitarian level. And that's something that has been brought up multiple times, especially in the latest attacks in October. And also, I believe, one of the reasons why genocide has more officially been declared by the UN compared to years and years ago, because we've hit this threshold of so many people dead versus the other side. We don't want death from any side, but when one's obviously been way more higher mortality rate and they're just throwing stuff at them, it gets to a point where you gotta kind of think about it.
For sure. And also just going a bit further with the fact that Israel says war is against Hamas but not Palestinian civilians, most hospitals, 94%, and schools, 95%, are non-functional due to Israeli attacks. So that means most of the population isn't getting an education, can't access any health care, and that, you know, perhaps Hamas is like a very, very small percentage also can't access healthcare, but that, you know, it doesn't really make sense logically how that's really connected. They're like targeting refugee camps.
Going into the hospital and the hospital thing, though, as well, kind of more on the rebuttal side for the Canadians who don't believe it's genocide. Israel has been saying and trying to show evidence, which there is no proven evidence, that Hamas are hiding within the basements of hospitals. And they're saying that they have pictures and bodyguard evidence of, you know, their weapons in the basement and things like that, which, I mean, people, and they also have tortured people, Palestinians, to say that, you know, they are hiding in these hospitals and using human shields to protect themselves, which there also is no evidence as to groups such as Amnesty International and all these humanitarian groups who have researched into this. And so, you know, obviously they shouldn't be bombing hospitals. I mean, they're using this idea of human shields, which is proven that they haven't, there's no evidence that the Hamas are using Palestinian peoples to hide from, which I believe is one of the designations of making you a terrorist organization, is using civilians. And so that there is also news articles I've seen online. I actually got influenced by a CBC article that headlined just as, you know, Hamas are hiding in the basement of this hospital. And I didn't read the full article, but I saw that and I'm like, oh, you know, they are bombing the hospitals because the Hamas are in them. But I didn't read the full thing. And I feel like if I could easily get that swayed, other people would only see that title and think, you know, oh, well, the Israelis, they're only doing what's right. Like, you know, get them in the hospitals because that's where they are. But no, they aren't. Yeah. Anyways.
There is a lot of, like, justification that Israel uses for why they're doing things. I think that's why people have a difficult time also, like, discerning what's true and what's not true. But at the same time, I think there are a lot of other factors in why people enable or accept this behavior from Israel too, that we can get into a bit later. And yeah, I think we could do a bit of a music break right now before we get into the academic censorship and why that happens, you know, why Canada also seems to support Israel. And yeah, so before we get into that, we will be playing a song by Eliana, and it's called Sokar. And yeah, she blends Arabic music, pop, and R&B. So yeah.
Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI, technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.
Radio Goethe. Modern German music at its best. Every Wednesday afternoon at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This is Radio Goethe.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. You're tuning into Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco.
And yeah, so the last couple of songs were Radia by Lina McCool, and before that was Sokar by Eliana. And we are back to our discussion on Palestine and academic censorship. And before that little music break, we talked mostly about genocide and what constitutes a genocide, why people might think that it's not one, even though it is. And now we're back talking about state and academic censorship.
So just before we start, just wanted to put out the definition of state censorship, which is suppression of speech, public communication, or information by the government, which is for state. So, for example, this is punishing people for saying what they want to say, controlling the media by limiting what people can see. So, for example, taking down news articles on out of news outlets, social media, and making sure that the algorithm doesn't see them. Versus or and or radio, what can be aired, etc.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I just want to go through a few questions about, like, who is doing this censorship? What are they doing also to support Israel? And that normally goes hand in hand with some form of state or academic censorship. And then, like, why does this happen? And first of all, who? What I found through my research, I think there's a lot of other countries that are doing it as well. But across Europe, especially Germany, France, England, Switzerland, and then also North America with the Canada and the U.S., generally more Western countries, and also social media platforms that are run by Western countries like Meta, they're also doing a lot of censorship with Palestine. And I want to focus on Canada, but also Germany when I talk about what they're doing, because I spent around 5 months in Germany for my study abroad in Berlin. And that also was part of the reason how I became more pro-Palestinian, because I saw how police treated these protesters who are just peacefully protesting. And, you know, there's a whole complicated political environment there right now with the rise of fascism and everything. But to focus back on Germany, they export arms to Israel and also provide political support. There's a lot of police violence at pro-Palestinian protests. There's a deportation. There's lots of deportation. Okay, maybe not lots, but there's deportation of pro-Palestinian protesters when possible. But it's illegal. Like, people are there legally, so they're abusing the migration law there. And they've also banned the keffiyeh in Berlin schools, which is, you know, a symbol of Palestinian identity or support for Palestine. There was actually a case when I was in Berlin of four protesters who were three EU nationals and one American to be deported from Germany. And the behaviors, like the cited behaviors, were saying things like free Gaza from the river to the sea and calling a police officer a fascist. So, you know, not really the consequence of what they did, not really equal to deporting them. And in Germany, they normally use accusations of anti-Semitism and also the country's history and ties with the state of Israel to justify protecting, yeah. You know,
are they justifying
Israel?
That since their whole history with Zionism and trying to, you know, the Holocaust and trying to rid Jewish people, and now they're saying, oh, you know, now we're trying to support Jewish people,
yeah,
and keep their homeland.
Yeah, pretty much. And saying, like, any kind of dissent against that idea is anti-Semitic, when it's really just criticizing the state and not the people. And then, yeah, just wanted to put that information out there about Germany. I guess I just had that in my mind, too, when thinking about this subject. And also Canada, I think a lot of people see Canada as this more neutral force and, like, just, you know, like, we're peacekeepers and everything. But actually, our government says that we haven't sent arms to Israel since January 2024. But recently, there's been some data uncovered from Israel, and four groups of researchers uncovered it: World Beyond War, Palestinian Youth Movement, and a couple others. And they found entries in the Israel Tax Authority that shows Canadian military weapon parts and ammunition are continuing to enter Israel to this day. And also, like, public commercial shipping documents support this finding. They're sent by Canadian companies and verified by permits through the Canadian government. And to clarify, there's no current permits allow for the shipment of arms and ammo to Israel, but the old permits are still good. They haven't been retracted. And so, yeah, that's, you know, how tangible Canada's connection with Israel is and support for Israel is.
I think also with the previous conversation we had about Hamas being labeled as a terrorist organization in certain countries, maybe potentially the fact that Hamas is labeled as a terrorist organization, specifically in Canada for one of the countries. This may be one of their reasons for still secretly supporting Israel, but that just may be something there.
It's interesting that it's secret, too, because Canada, like the government has acknowledged the pressure from a lot of Canadian citizens who are calling out for them to not support anymore, and publicly they're saying they haven't, but it's still, you know, under the table happening. And in terms of academic censorship, there's been a few like published cases about it. At UBC, there's a sessional instructor who got let go after pro-Palestinian advocacy in 2024. His name is Sean Tucker, medical resident, University of Ottawa, suspended over pro-Palestinian posts. U of T actually issued a trespass notice threatening any academic staff who participate in encampments on campus with discipline, including termination, which is just a pretty obvious threat to academic freedom and the right to peaceful assembly. There's like a lot of these examples. If you go onto the Canadian Association of University Teachers, they have a report on the academic freedom in Canada after October 7th, 2023. And they have a ton of examples of how different academic institutions will suppress any talk about pro-Palestinian discussion or action. And yeah, I just want to reiterate for people who maybe missed it is that we're partially talking about this because one of my professors talked about it in one of my lectures about how it was a genocide, and that was my first experience with it being acknowledged in an academic setting. And she did seem, you know, very tentative about it because I think a lot of this censorship makes people scared to even talk about it or bring it up.
Yeah. I think the question is that naturally rises is why are we doing all this academic censorship, and especially in Canada, where it seems like more of the majority of people are now moving towards supporting Palestine and the idea of genocide and having sympathy. So, yeah, naturally this led us into why specifically in Canada. And on my take, this is just a theory, but that that universities are trying to adopt this idea of institutional neutrality. So this means not taking a side as an academic institution to protect, you know, academic freedom and freedom of speech, avoid alienating people who have different opinions from others and ostracizing them, and kind of more encouraging these diverse discussions, which is, you know, arguably there are pros and cons to this.
Yeah, and just to get into the not taking a side or being neutral a bit more is SFU clearly says that their stance is committed to anti-racism, decolonization, and promoting an equitable and inclusive community, because they actually had to create an equity, diversity, and inclusion office because of, you know, that, I guess, the debate on free speech versus hate speech. So they're like, okay, we are committed. And they specifically say decolonization, anti-racism. And yet, you know, there are some institutions within, or what's the word, some faculties within SFU have said that they are pro-Palestine publicly. I think sociology and anthropology are a couple of them. But the whole SFU body, who's like represented by Joy Johnson, there's no statement on it. And I just thought it was interesting that Joy Johnson did call to end the invasion Ukraine, but there has still not been any statement on Palestine. So, you know, it kind of shows like where people are taking a side and what they can or can't talk about.
Yeah, if SFU is trying to do this institutional neutrality like a lot of other universities, obviously Joy Johnson's actions have been failing to do this, because, you know, calling to an end of the invasion in Ukraine, that is going against this idea, and then as well excluding and not mentioning Palestine. So that's obviously the neutrality is not there. And, you know, the institution itself is supposed to stay neutral. And I mean, Joy Johnson is the face of our institution. So we are now not neutral. And this, I guess, it's hard to stay neutral, you know, because an institution is made of so many individuals, and especially, you know, in a more liberal environment, we're going to have more same ideas that will be pushed, but they're, you know, individuals should be free to express their views. But within the institution, under this idea of neutrality, that if the faculty were to, you know, choose one side of the conflict, you know, just mention, hey, like, I want to support Palestine, this does make it biased as the institution. And that leads into all these problems, which maybe is the reason for all these universities, as DJ Star was saying, of the instructors being let go, residents taking all these trespass notices, et cetera, going off this idea of neutrality, which in SFU's case, our university, we aren't doing.
And just to add, is that the whole idea of like this institutional neutrality actually violates academic freedom and freedom of speech, because it's being weaponized in a way that people can't actually talk about pro-Palestinian issues. And by eliminating that side of the discourse and not really doing the same for the other side, as DJ Coco was saying, it's pretty biased. And it impacts the ability of professors and other academic professionals to exercise their rights to freedom of expression for Palestine specifically.
Yeah, so any speaking out about Palestine, you would face consequences from the employer. So these people losing tenure or their jobs and going against this whole idea, which leads into censorship occurring. And, you know, there are benefits, it seems, in a more abstract form of this institutional neutrality of trying to protect freedom. But then by trying to protect freedom, you're hurting people's right to express freedom, which is kind of like a cycle, you know. And there's also other problems, like how staying silent even is a form of complicity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these professors and lecturers, they can't say what they want to say. And so they end up actually helping the problem that they don't want to help. And it makes this, it's, neutrality is pretty much fiction at this point, because how are we even supposed to be neutral with all of this?
Mm-hmm.
So those are just some other points against this idea.
And also, just to bring this conversation slightly to a close in terms of, you know, why there is academic censorship, is that there's also a perspective that Israel's values are Canada's values in a way. Like, this is kind of known as settler solidarity, because, you know, we are both states that are kind of formed on genocide and also like just colonization and these types of values. And our own history as a nation is often not really talked about when we talk about our reaction and support towards Israel, because, you know, our state was formed on the genocide against Indigenous people and continues to be. And if we do acknowledge that what Israel is doing is a genocide, then we will also have to support the decolonization of our own country and the reconciliation that is not truly happening right now in our country as well. So I think that's also another factor as to why we are suppressing these pro-Palestinian ideas, because it's also like a mirror back to our own country and what we need to do to be better and to change. So
because I think when people are Canadian specifically, that they have to make some sort of sacrifice to their own life to help Palestinians, such as, you know, donating their money that they could use, or etc. And by that sacrifice that people don't want to do, as ZJ Star was saying, that would mean, yeah, facing the Indigenous history and, for example, doing the things that we don't want to do, like giving the land back to them.
Yeah.
And so exactly. Is it things that can we even we can't change quickly overnight, but it will take centuries to do. And it is very, it's very difficult to do. But I don't know, I felt that was slightly relevant.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. Because if we acknowledge Israel is effed up, then we have to acknowledge we are too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people don't, you know, that's not how our government really operates. Like, we continue to benefit off of this. So
and
why would we change it?
The status quo, we don't want to lose what we have right now. So,
yeah, I guess so.
Another topic about society.
Society and the status quo, guys.
We will not get into right now. But I think we'll just conclude this discussion before we get back into the music.
Yeah, just a little conclusion is that, like, things that you can do if you do care about academic censorship and our Canadian government still continuing to support Israel. Is that if you go to SFU, there are protests happening through various organizations. You can go, like, look into SFPIRG and also I think it's SOCA, perhaps. There's, yeah, like, you can get in, just look up, you know, protests happening in SFU. There's one, like, a couple weeks ago. And just going to protests in general. There's one on the art gallery, at the art gallery every Saturday. Because just, we need to, like, demand certain things from our local governments. And they do succeed, because in August of 2025, so just a few months ago, Burnaby City Council passed a pro-Palestinian motion asking the federal government to impose an arms embargo on Israel, so no more sending arms to Israel. Also committed Burnaby to signing the Apartheid-Free Communities Pledge. So yeah, just in general, like, going to local protests and getting organized can really make some real impacts for this.
And even before doing any action too, if you're still on the fence, which I admittedly was on the fence about this topic, it's good to do a lot of thorough research and actually read thoroughly credible sources about the conflict.
The genocide.
Don't just take news articles for what their titles are, because that's a mistake that I did for one article, which really influenced my opinion. And really check your sources, because, you know, Israel will say certain things, but you have to really dig deep to find out the evidence against it. And as well, just talking with people, because I felt like I could make more of my opinion by talking to lots of people with different opinions before I could get to this point of my argument, or I guess my standpoint on the conflict. So just before even doing any action, to just think, like, what do you personally think about this, and then get into what you can do.
And also, just one last thing is that calling it a genocide is more impactful than calling it a conflict, because, you know, that's what it is. And then there's less time for confusion.
As of October
25th. But we're always learning. So anyways, the next two songs are, we're going to get into it, because
genocide as of October 2025.
Yeah, we need to get into the next show. But we're here every week. Next up is our friend's open mic, and the two next songs are by Zane. She's from Palestine. Her debut album was released October 15th, shaped by pain and love from her experience living in Palestine. Nostalgia is the name of this first song, and then Kolo Lena is the name of the second song. So thank you for listening. Sorry for this rushed extra, but yeah.
We'll see you next week.
Next week.
Tuesday, 6 to 7.
Bye. Whoa. غرقة منزل بس مش خيم Dreaming of silhouettes and no shame فيديش بس ما فيش طير بيضوى بآخر النفق roads to nowhere في نجمة ضاية بالسماء بس ما بتضوي إلا ذكرى علموني عشقها من عيوني وأحكي بمشاعر كل بيحسها بس خبوا إنه القصة كلها واحد وهم بتنادي الوجود لا بتدلني لا بتوصلني
بعاتب بالأيام الشاي ما تكونوا زي زمان
Thank you.